Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Joseph G., and I'm a refugee from several 12-step programs and co-creator of RumRadio.org. RumRadio.org was created to inform, inspire, and empower sponsorship locally and internationally to be the very best, both personally and spiritually. A sponsor is someone who takes you through the 12 steps. A sponsor is a guide, a mentor, a friend, and a teacher. A sponsor is the older brother and sister we never had. There are many 12-step programs. Overeaters Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Debtors Anonymous, and on and on Anonymous. There's even a Paranoids Anonymous. The only problem, no one will tell you where they hold the meetings. As people in recovery, we have learned that addiction is a spiritual malady requiring a spiritual solution. We are not weak people trying to get strong, nor are we bad people trying to get good. We are sick people trying to get well. Rum Radio is for anyone that thinks they might have a problem with excessive compulsive behavior that manifests itself in addiction. RumRadio.org addresses the A and A model, but can be easily conformed to any adverse spiritual malady that manifests itself into addictive behavior. The particular spiritual malady is but a symptom of the disease. At RumRadio.org, we get down to causes and conditions. We in recovery have discovered that the one assurance of getting happy, joyous, and free was to work with someone who suffers from the same malady. But you can't give away something you don't have. Rum Radio is that resource, and like usual, if you find a benefit, pass it on. Take what you need and leave the rest. I have dedicated my time, talents, and treasure to this end. The credit for this work is God's and the fellowship. This is Joseph G. See you on the radio. Rum Radio.
Hello, this is Joseph G. Welcome you to the this installment of Rum Radio. We have a new co-host, Harold. Are you there, Harold?
Hello, this is Harold.
Harold,
nice to be with you.
I know Harold B. from a local AA group. One of my home groups. Harold has excellent credentials in the recovery field and years of experience in recovery, and should be quite a positive, informative person to address some of these subjects that we tend to get into on the website. But these are things that we don't usually get to hear in the meetings. That's my experience. Yours, Harold?
Well, that's true. Some of the topics don't really get enough airtime, and if people do discuss some of these ideas, what I experience is that they sensationalize some of these ideas, and they don't really stay in the solution. That's what I like to do. I really appreciate the program. I owe my life to the program. It's been well over 20 years, and I keep learning more and more all the time. In fact, my personal motto is, you only get to keep what you give away. So I like to share my experience. I like to hear other people's experience and then bring it all back to the 12 steps, the solution, and stick to what we find in the book. If we really thoroughly understand that, then it doesn't leave us a lot of time to go exploring in other areas. Now, I do a lot of study in the big book, and I do make time for that. I find that they fit together quite well, but especially on this topic. But tonight we'll stick stick to the big book, try to live in the solution, and see if we can attract someone who might call in, share their experience as well.
Oh, great. Okay, Harold. Let me give you the call-in number. If you're out there and you'd like to give your opinion, your strength and your hope, things that you might find that you agree or you disagree, that's fine. We're hoping that we'll learn other things from other folks. You know, by no means I know it all. When I first got into the program of recovery, within 3 or 4 months, I knew everything. And now after 14 and a half years, I know that I don't know. Everyone works it a little different.
It keeps building also. At 23 and a half years, I'm beginning to understand that when we think we know it, that's a danger sign. I try to stay open to learning every day. I want to learn something from everyone that I meet.
Ah, wisdom, humility. I read this just recently, and I put it on one of the posts on the website, was that once you know it all, that's the beginning of when you start to learn something important. After you know it
well,
all.
Well, and I got some good advice from my academic advisor at the university, and their main point was that we're really not trying to get to a point where we know everything. We're just trying to figure out where to find things. That's the key to a higher education, is learning where the resources exist, how to find the latest information about things. There's been so much brain research in the last 5 years. It's like we're basically starting over with all of our understanding about the brain. The satisfying thing about it is that it does validate everything that it says in the book about the disease. It is a disease of the brain. And now we are, with the genetics and the brain imaging, they're able to say, look here, this is what a craving looks like in the brain. Here's what things look like in the brain of a normal person. Here's someone active in their addiction. Here's someone active in their recovery. After a couple, 3 years of recovery, this is how it looks. It's really fascinating. I wish we were on TV here, so that I could show some of these images.
I know, that stuff is fascinating. I just came across, and I posted on the website, THIQ. It's a chemical configuration. It's been known since World War II. They were going to use it as a painkiller, but it was so addictive, they opted for heroin instead. A lady in Houston, a doctor, was doing autopsies on the winos that were coming in at night, you know, unknown, who, you know, John Doe's, and she was doing autopsies on these poor folks, winos, not heroin addicts, and what she found was a residual amount of this THIQ in the brain, which is a residual from heroin. And these fellas were winos. They didn't do heroin. And she found this preponderance in there, and they did other tests with animals and humans too, and they found out that this THIQ had a residual effect in the brain for 7 years.
Oh, yes.
It was in the brain. So, and a lot of times in the program, people say, well, you know, you still get a little crazy after 5 years or 6 years. And that's because that chemical is still available to the brain. They've even found that rats that would not have drank alcohol at all would avoid it at all costs if they introduced the THIQ into their system, the rats would start drinking alcohol. Wow.
That is amazing. And some of the most fascinating brain research and brain imaging was a few years ago when they were studying the brains of infants and how fascinating they are, how quickly they learn and how they learn. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Let me give you that. Let me give you the call-in number if anybody would like to chime in. We're going to be getting into, I have it listed on the rumradio.org website as misstepping. It's sort of like a combination of words. It's really about, we have a phenomenon in the program called 13th stepping. There is no such thing as a 13th step. It's euphemistically, we refer to that. As inappropriate romance and early recovery. So I'd like to get into that. We don't usually mention that, but that is a phenomenon that does go along. And I believe how this ties into sponsorship is that it's not really addressed at the group level, and I don't see how you can, because we have no AA police. We have no means of enforcing any kinds of rules or regulations, and we depend on the sponsor to get out the information to the newcomer. And I think sometimes the sponsors really aren't aware of how to introduce this information, and it's really good information. It's from years of experience to get that out. The phone number is 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. Oh, and I'd also like to, well, I wanted to thank Hoyt and WNAH in Nashville for giving this live feed over the air as a public service announcement. To me, this is one of the highest parts of public service, is getting the word out. I believe the nation as a whole and the world in itself is in the grips of addictive behaviors, and a lot of it is because of the pressures that we come under, and we seek something outside of ourselves to get out of that. And I think this is really good to understand that it's all about a spiritual solution and how we address that, and the mechanism that we have that has proved to be very powerful, and it works. That's the best thing I could say about it. Okay, misstepping. I'm going to come from the 12 and 12. The 12 and 12 is a companion to the Big Book. I consider it like a concordance would be to the Bible. The Big Book is our spiritual work that has all the information necessary. It's been written in, 1935? It's been around 76 years. I think AA has been around 76 years. And it's proved to help millions of people from a hopeless state of mind and body. The 12 and 12 says, to think of lust seems impossible. But how many men and women speak love with their lips and believe what they say, so that they can hide lust in a dark corner of their minds? And even while staying within conventional bounds, many people have to admit that their imaginary sex excursions are apt to be all dressed up as dreams of romance. That's very powerful. Like I said, the 13th step is also euphemistically known as the 13th step by members in recovery. When someone with long-term sobriety has romantic, if not sexual, designs and takes advantage of a newcomer's vulnerability, engage in inappropriate romantic entanglements. Have you had any experience with this?
Well, not directly, but indirectly, I've seen many people suffer. Would you mind reading that one more time? It goes by kind of quickly.
Okay, the 12 and 12?
Yes.
To think of liking lust seems impossible. But how many men and women seek love with their lips and believe what they say, so that they can hide lust in a dark corner of their minds? And even while staying within conventional bounds, many people have to admit that their imaginary sex excursions are apt to be all dressed up as dreams of romance. It's also euphemistically known as the 13th step by members of recovery, as when someone with long-term sobriety has romantic, if not sexual, designs and takes advantage of a newcomer's vulnerability and engage in inappropriate romantic entanglements.
And the fascinating thing about this sort of experience is that the newcomer usually does not realize that they are vulnerable. They don't realize that they're not thinking straight. It's hard for them to see themselves and to realize that how much better they're going to feel in a few months and a couple years. And so because what they're looking at, they're looking with, and they just, the new person does not comprehend how much better they're going to be doing a little bit later. And as ego would have it, a newcomer will often say, well, I'm doing fine, I'm doing great, I can think straight. In fact, I can think of a few improvements that you guys could make on these 12 steps. And well, they're off and running. Well, someone who's been around a while and they are thinking straight, they may be thinking about things that are really not fair. And so having romance, having sex with somebody that's new in the program is really not fair because they don't know what they don't know. They're especially vulnerable and they can't tell that they're vulnerable. So people that have been around a while need to just to help take care of those newcomers and maybe, you know, take them aside, give them kind of an overview and tell them, don't do this. You know, we've got to find a way to do that.
Well, I would say I think that's where the education from the sponsor is critical. I was in a club one time, and they had this big, there was several predators, and they wanted to have a posting on the wall, and they wanted to have in the beginner's packet some information, and they went back and forth. And of course, you know, nothing ever got done because it was, it really sends out the wrong message, I think. You know, we're not bastions of morality. This is not what this is about. We're there to be of maximum service to God and our fellows, but staying with certain bounds of our own personal limitations. We can't really tell anybody how to live their life, or should we? All we can do is really inform them, and I think that's where the sponsor really comes in, is to give that information. They don't know what they don't know, and the sponsor who comes in right away, you know, and that's up to the newcomer to really latch on, and then the sponsor being educated can now has resources and tools to make the newcomer aware of this instead of waiting for the newcomer to find somebody that has what she wants and blah, 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 you know, making the AA a dating service. So, you know, that drives me nuts, but that's the way the culture has evolved. You know, you're supposed to go to a lot of meetings. If someone says something that you resonate with, and you go to a lot of meetings and find that one and only sponsor, I call it the unicorn of sponsorship. It's a romantic ideal. Like there's this one sponsor in the whole world that's just right for you, you know. And, you know, the funny thing about it, I've seen that where that's actually happened many times. People fall into it. It's a spiritual connection, and that's great. But I see that more as an exception than the rule. And I see most of the time is the rule is the person waits way too long to get into the steps. And they get into bad habits, and they're staying sober. They're being accepted by a new group of people. And when are you going to work the steps? I'm staying sober. Is that not enough? We're missing out at a great time when they first come in. That pain is fuel. That pain is a resource that we do not use like they used to use back in the beginning. All right, get back on topic.
The pain can really move a person forward, and working the steps with pen and paper and a sponsor. And if we miss that window of opportunity and their pain diminishes, we've really missed something important.
Now, some people, you know, that happens, and a lot of people would disagree. They'll say, well, that's not my experience. My experience is I had to come in for 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years, or whatever it took until I was ready. And, you know, my experience is when you're really in recovery and you're growing, you're going to be uncomfortable. And people do not want to get out of a comfort zone. Early sponsorship.
I call it being uncomfortable in order to grow.
Yes, exactly. Perfect.
I encourage my sponsees to welcome the strange and different.
Ah, this is where a common sense becomes uncommon sense.
I think so. Yes.
Women are particularly...
Go ahead.
Women are particularly vulnerable with this phenomenon because that's the nature of the beast. But this phenomenon is not exclusive. Men are also at risk. We have found that people in recovery have a higher IQ than the average. So I always hear that from people in recovery. I believe that to be true. Very creative, naturally anarchist by nature, you know, rebellious but highly intelligent. And people with higher than average IQs, it would stand to reason, they also have a very strong libido. The years of addiction have produced little or no inhibitions, and morality has taken a backseat to gratification.
That's a great sentiment. I agree totally that not only is the IQ above average, but also I find that people active in their addictions are usually very charming individuals, very charming, exceptionally charming people. And that tends to fuel their addiction and their all the problems, you know, their chemical dependency.
That goes along with... Serial killers are usually very charming also by nature. I don't know if you ever read that. Ted Bundy. He could talk you out of your car. I mean, this guy, that's how charming he was.
Yeah. So with that charm and that intelligence, people are often quite gifted with words, quite convincing. And so it's a setup. It can be a setup for good recovery, and it can be a setup and a preparation for getting into some deep relapse triggers, things that dangerous emotions that move people toward drinking again.
My experience, Harold, is newcomers are used to being validated sexually by the opposite sex. We come into the rooms of recovery sick and wounded people, easy prey to the unscrupulous. A romantic diversion comes with the promise of a momentary relief from the pain of mind and body and spirit. It also distracts us from the work of recovery. Many a newcomer has fallen into the trap, which in turn has stunted their growth, and have some even died because of it. We like to think the rooms of recovery are a safe place, and for the most part they are. There are those who are sexual predators. They appear as sheep having all the words, phrases, and humor of solid recovery. They are but ravenous wolves seeking conquest and unrighteous dominion. They are Svengalis holding the art of flattery and deceit. They come as in drunken horse thieves, and now they are sober horse thieves.
And, you know, the one of the ideas that you shared is that it's really about power and control, and that could be the topic for an entire program in itself. The difference between love and power and control.
Yeah, that would make a good topic.
As you mentioned earlier, that they have love on their lips and lust in their hearts. And some people repeat the phrases so often, I love you, I love you, I really care about you, I love you, I love you. They've repeated it so much that they begin to believe it themselves. And that's when it takes on a whole new level of damage and a whole new sinister quality, because the deceit, the person deceiving has managed to, through practice and dedication, deceive themselves. And then they become more convincing to the vulnerable. So, have we mentioned what to do instead? Avoid romantic relationships at least for the first year?
That's usually the recommendation. This is what my sponsors had told me. Now, this might be a little oblique. He said that, you know, he says you can have as much sex as you want your first year of recovery. And the second year, you can have it with another human being.
Well, there you go. We want to live in the solution.
The other thing he told me, and this is always controversial. I put this on a website, on a forum one time, and I got flack that I really didn't expect from saying that. It's more of a tongue-in-cheek, and my sponsor also told me that looking for a mate in AA was like looking for Olympic hopefuls in a polio ward.
Ooh.
The
simple truth. The people in AA did not get there on a high. They got there because their lives were messed up in a number of different areas. And that's my experience, too. I didn't come in great shape. So we shouldn't be there as looking for a dating service. We shouldn't be looking for a mate. We shouldn't be looking for a spouse. We should just work the steps, do the next right thing, and avoid taking advantage of somebody that is vulnerable.
Vulnerable, right. Wounded. They're sick, wounded people, and they're very vulnerable. The other thing my sponsor told me, under every skirt, there was a slip. yeah, it was a pretty open kind of guy. When I say the polio war deal, I'm not threatening. I thought polio was eradicated, but other people said, oh, you're dissing the disabled. That's not the intent. It just shows that most people do not have the emotional maturity, at least for a very long time, to enter into a committed, loving relationship. It takes time. That's not usually. Oh, we have a caller. And let's see what he got.
Very good.
Someone there?
Hello? Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, is this wrong radio?
Okay. It is.
My, My name is Jim, and I'm calling from Fresno, Texas. I've been trying to get y'all on my laptop, but for some reason I'm not able to click onto it. But anyhow, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic addict myself. And tell me, what's the subject about tonight? Maybe I can give some give somebody some hope on it.
Sure. How long you been in the program?
14 years. Well, it'll be actually about 13 years. Since the 13th of April, 98. Yeah.
Yeah. The topic is inappropriate romantic relationships in the rooms. 13-stepping or misstepping or.
Okay, I understand what that means. We call that 13-step where I live too. You find there are people that will take advantage of or that do take advantage of newcomers sometimes, but I guess the best way to avoid getting hooked up with a person like that is just put their spirituality to a test. If they try to come on to you and try to pick you up because they realize you're vulnerable, then they're not working the program. So the program tells us that the main principle is honesty, you know, and that means being honest with each other, you know. And if they try to take advantage of a person, of a newcomer, just because the newcomer is vulnerable, then they're not working the true spiritual program themselves. And I wouldn't have anything. I wouldn't, you know, it's good to make friends in recovery. That's okay. But just don't take it past that, you know, because if you do, you're wrong. Well, I'm sorry, it don't matter if you've been clean and sober for 15 or 20 years. We didn't want anybody to take advantage of us when we first came into this program, so why would we want to do it to other newcomers, you know? Am I making any sense on that?
Yeah, it's a spiritual program, and where does you're moving your spirituality into romance, into lust. You know, just you're trying to distract yourself from the hard work of recovery.
Okay.
That is an aspect of this thing that we haven't covered yet, and that is during all this romance and love at first sight and dating and carrying on and spending money. Where, you know, that's a tremendous distraction from the work we're supposed to be doing, which is pen and paper and sponsor and working our steps, according to the first 164 pages of the Big Book.
Exactly. And if we take
advantage of that way.
Huh?
Yes, we distract ourselves that way.
And the main thing that any newcomer should realize, and not only newcomers but old timers as well, is that our main objective is sobriety, not physical attraction or, you know, anything like that. If I don't stay clean and sober, that sexuality, it's not going to mean anything to me, you know, if you understand what I'm getting at.
No, absolutely. Well,
okay. I'll throw all that stuff out the window, you know. But anyhow, I just thought I'd call and see if y'all, make sure y'all were having the program tonight. I wasn't sure if it was on tonight or not, because I can't get it on my computer for some reason. But anyhow,
I wonder why. Did you go to rumradio.org, the website?
Oh, okay. That's why I'm not getting. I didn't try that. Okay.
Right. If you go to the web, there's other ways to do that, but the easiest way is you go to the rumradio.org website, and there's a banner right on top. You click the banner, and that will take you right to the site.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll do that then. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for calling. Thanks for calling in. That was very, very helpful.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Something I wanted to read, a sponsee with years of sobriety, and this is one of my sponsees, laid eyes on a young woman new to recovery, and it was love at first sight. He pursued her as men do and when the object of his affection. Being in love, there is no pain, as such, no reason to do the hard work of recovery. A tumultuous marriage ensued. She did not drink or continue to use drugs. We have found that alcohol is but a symptom of the disease, and like any disease that goes untreated, it only gets worse. He had interrupted her recovery, and they both have paid dearly for this indiscretion. They're still married. They just had a child, but the relationship has been very rocky and still not really quite sealed up, in my, you know, as much as I would know, but he's had a real hard time, and he knew better, too. He had years and still insisted on pursuing this woman who just was new into recovery. Because he was in love, you know. He saw this woman, and hey. All right, let me get into this and then some other ideas. This is about my youngest daughter, Christina. Had finally ended up in a rehab center because of drugs and alcohol. It is customary with some rehab facilities to shuttle the residents to local AA meetings to help make the transition from organized care to disorganized care. Christina was one such lady who was attending what has now become my home, was my home group at the time, the Post Oak Club in Houston. Christina was a very pretty young woman of 19 years chronologically, emotionally closer to the age when she first started drinking and drugging that was about 12 years old. Christina was beset with the attention of a young man. One of the potential suitors was not very young, a man of 35 years. And it was new in recovery. Christina had not obtained even a rudimentary education. The not-so-young man was a college graduate from A&M. The suitor's vows of undying love and constant adoration wore her down, and in time, she was swept off her feet. The bliss of new love is a very heady thing. As two people become one, two against the world, the pain is now gone. There is no reason to do the hard work to achieve recovery. An easier, softer way has been found. Why work the 12 steps? Why get a sponsor? We have each other. A marriage ensued that quickly produced my grandchild, Claire. The blush was too quickly off the rose, and the work of true love was attempted but failed for lack of tools. Christina started to manifest behavior consistent with addiction, and their 3.5-year partnership ended in divorce. Christina lost custody and went on a downhill spiral. She quickly reverted back to old behavior, putting herself in a position to be harmed. The dreaded ring from a phone call, which is every parent's worst nightmare, came about 10:15. A former son-in-law had called 8 years before with the same such news. Christina was found dead from an apparent overdose from cocaine, methamphetamine, and alcohol. Christina is now buried at Pine Lawn Cemetery, a mile adjacent to the Post Oak AA Club. I tell you all this in the hope that it might save one person from this deadly disease. This is the reason we created rumradio.org, a sponsorship website to give direction, inspiration, and understanding.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing that, and I admire you for having the serenity to go ahead and talk about that. I can't even imagine the pain of losing a child. I've heard that it's just immense, that it's the worst pain on the planet. And your ability to talk about that in hopes that it will touch someone out there and cause them to rethink an unwise set of choices. I'm really grateful to be here and to hear your story and to encourage people out there to listen and sit up and take note and maybe change their lives. That's a powerful, powerful story. So
She lost her
sobriety, she lost her husband, she lost her child, and she lost her life.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, and there was nothing I could do about it.
Yeah, we'd love to be able to influence our kids more strongly, but after they turn 18, you can't lock them up against their will.
No, my experience is that all you could do is teach your children correct principles. And once having done that, you have to really let them go and do their own thing, whatever that thing might be, and support them in whatever manner that, as long as it's within reason and convention, to support them, whatever they want to do. You know, that doesn't matter. But you've taught them correct principles. I was not there because of a divorce to teach her correct principles. So that's... Yeah, see, that's my end of it. So this is sort of like the chickens coming home to roost kind of deal in the worst kind of way. But it's taught me lessons. The Lord has put me in a position to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. And I believe when we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service and in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead.
There we go. That sums it up. That sums it up. So with our topic tonight being 13th stepping, there are a lot of young people out there who may be 19 years old, may be in rehab. The rehab center may bring them to a meeting. There may be a charming man who's several years older, who talks the good talk, and he wants to connect with somebody new in the program. So hopefully we can talk to the predator. Earlier tonight we said that there's not much, we can't really expect much from that. It's not easy to do. They're not open to listen. So maybe tonight we're talking to the young people, saying, if you're new in recovery, if you're new in the program, beware. Maybe the old saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. You know, maybe that applies here.
You know, some people, it's in the big book too. Some lady took exception to this post, and she said you're trying to scare people and blah blah blah. And the big book says that we have no auspices over other people's sexual activities. And basically, I agree. We have no right to determine other people's morality. We're not the morality police. We're not the sexual conduct police. We have no authority. All we can do is give our experience, strength, and hope. And my experience is that if you work the steps and you're diligent about that and you start working with other people and you start expanding your spiritual experience, the understanding will come to you. You want to have a relationship during the meantime? Well, if that's what you decide, well, then that's what you have decided. And everyone has their journey to go on, whatever that journey might look like, even if that journey runs to the grave. As a sponsor, we can't get anybody sober. We can't keep anybody sober. We can't keep anybody alive. If you think that you can do that, you're playing God. It's hard enough playing sponsor.
Well, I agree completely. My experience is that the work with another person on the steps from the book is really the focus. That's the answer. That's the solution that I try to live in. So I'm not here to be morality police. All I'm saying is what has really helped me most is focusing on the steps, working with others, have a sponsor, understand that part of what I'm doing when I work with my sponsor is I'm getting ready to reach out to someone that's newer in the program than I am and help them work the steps. My working the steps prepares me to help someone newer work the steps.
Absolutely.
Let me give in the call.
Yeah, give the number again.
It's 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. I wanted to tell you about my oldest daughter also while we're on the subject, Julianne. And she was my oldest daughter. She was a chip off the old block. At one time, she wanted to move in with me. And we had an incident. She was smoking methamphetamine. Got lost at the airport, and I had a tough love with her. But she wanted to move back, and I was very leery about her moving back until she worked the program. So I said, "Look, Julie," I said, "you can come live with me, but I need you to do the first 5 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think the 5th step is really a big critical spiritual step, and I think that those first 5 steps lay the platform for the rest of recovery, my experience." So she said, "All right, Dad." I said, "Look, I'll sweeten the pot," and this is not recommended, but fathers and mothers act differently when it's their own children. We just do. We can't emotionally distract, so we're going to do things a little different, and this isn't programmed. So I said, "Look, Julie, I'll tell you what. I'll give you $100 for every step that you do. That's $500. And if you do the first 5 steps, you'll get $500, and then you could come move in with me." And she was living up in Jersey, and I was in Austin. Okay. So I'd call her up, and how you doing? And she was having a hard time. She would try to take her bicycle. Her mother was not supporting recovery. And that happens a lot. Yeah, yeah. The mother could not see. The mother's has her own issues, but she couldn't see recovery. Still can't to this day. But anyway, so she'd take her bicycle, and she got hit by a car on the way to the meetings. I said, "Well, why don't you call up the meeting house, tell them you need a lift, and you give another alcoholic the opportunity to do some service work." Okay. So finally, did you work the steps? I said, yeah. I said, "I need to talk to your sponsor." So she's okay. Finally, after months and months go by, she gives me a lady's name, and I call her up and say, "Hi, this is Julie's dad." And she said that she's working the steps, and she said, "I'm sorry, Joseph, but Julie offered me $100 to tell you that she worked the steps." You know, like, oh,
$400 profit.
Yeah, truly a chip off the old block, that's for sure. But Julie never really got it. And it was funny, at the time, she had just been accepted back into college, and she was really excited, and things looked like it was really going good for her. And I got the phone call from the same guy, my ex-son-in-law now, and Julianne had overdosed on morphine in her sleep.
My.
And her mother was on Xanax. So because the mother was so zoned out on Xanax, she didn't hear the death rattles.
Wow.
And, So, and she was 29 at the time.
Wow, that is so such a huge pain.
I think it was about 5 years sober at the time, and when I went up to New Jersey to the funeral, it kind of brought my family together because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was able to put my grief on hold and be there for the rest of my children. I had 5 daughters, so for the other four daughters, I was there. Their mom was kind of just flaking out. She was just wearing party dresses and stuff at the funeral, just weirding out. And so I was there for my children and was able to do my grieving at another time. But so I was there because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't all about me. But I'll tell you, Harold, when I walked into the viewing room, and I hadn't seen my daughter in a couple of years, and for some reason I was the only one in. They were out in the parking lot smoking cigarettes or something, and they didn't know that the personal family viewing was at that time. And I went in there, and I was all alone. It was like my spirit had left my body. The Bible says the pain was exquisite, and I know what that means. And I know what that means. I've lived that. My second daughter was excruciating, but it was like my psyche was not going to allow me to go to that same place again. So it just comes in little waves at a time. And I have to accept, you know, that as a Christian, that there's another time and another place and that all things work for good. So this is the energy. My time, talents, and treasures have gone to putting together rumradio.org. And that is the purpose. People want to know, what are you doing this? What's in it for you? Is this about fame? Is this about fortune? What's this about? And so that I tell people, this is a way for me to give back. God has put me in a position to be of maximum service, and that's what I'm doing. So I've dedicated my time, talents, and treasure. No money is being made. I'm anonymous on the site, so I hold to the 11th tradition. And I've been offered, you know, ads and things, and I'm not going there. I keep the thing clean, and this is my way of giving back. And that's it.
So it's not a profit-making thing. It is actually costing you. Well,
it does.
Your ability to put your experience out there and paint a picture for people to see, a picture of spiritual warfare. I mean, this is warfare, and the enemy wants us dead. And your girls that have passed, their lives can have more purpose if we learn things from all the pain that led up to their death.
Yeah, it's a tragedy. To take something good out of that tragedy, to make the silver cloud, you know, every silver cloud has a dark lining kind of deal. And I think sometimes it's called a refiner's fire. Sometimes you go through that, and God hones you in a certain way to accomplish certain things. And I'm nobody special. If you wouldn't notice me on the street, I'm one of the weak things of this world. No, make no doubt. And my experience is, God uses the weak things of this world to accomplish His purposes. The point you were making, we don't fight against flesh and blood, but powers and dominions and wickedness in high places. It is a spiritual warfare. And the warfare is growing daily. People, in my experience, try to elbow, in some places, elbow God out of the rooms. This is a spiritual program. We don't care if you're Muslim, Jewish, Christian, Catholic. If you have no God at all, if you a group of drunks, G-O-D, a good orderly direction, atheist, agnostic, everyone is welcome. This is a democracy of the spirit. We hold no contempt. We hold no agreements with anybody. All we ask, if I'm your sponsor and you don't know who might be out there, but you need somebody, a higher power, somebody more powerful than you, I say, let's pray, but why don't you just address it to whom it may concern? This is an opportunity for us to become sober and extend the hand of AA to the alcoholic who still suffers or to whatever addiction that is. That we can only do that because we have that experience. Don't concern yourself with other people's flavors of religion or understanding. We become the hands of God as you understand hands.
Yes, and it's so valuable to me all the way back 23+ years. If I had to conform with someone else's idea of God, I would probably be dead now. But I really valued chapter 4, We Agnostics, and that opened up some room, some latitude for me to think about a power greater than myself. And I really didn't know what I thought of God. I didn't know, there were some concepts, but I knew that my experience with alcohol made it a power greater than me. It had kicked my butt, and as had drugs. But so I was clear on that, and that was actually a blessing. And then, so I looked around. My first sponsor was 6'4", 300 pounds. He was a power greater than me, and that was useful to me. And I thought, well, okay, a power greater than me. Alcohol is, my sponsor is, the group. I thought two heads are better than one. That's a power greater than me. So I adopted the group as my higher power, which worked just fine for a long time. And I reread chapter 4 again and again, and it encourages us to learn from other people from various backgrounds, and to ask yourself, what is the value that so many millions of people get? And so I started looking at this and looking at that, and looking at the big book, and decided one day, my sponsor said, well, you cannot have contempt prior to investigation. Have you even read it? And I had plenty of contempt, but I hadn't actually read the Bible. So I started to read it and study it. And so that's a topic for a whole nother program also. I've gotten tremendous value. But if you guys in the groups, men and women in the groups, had not loved me until I could love myself, had not welcomed me and told me to keep coming back, had not put up with my all of my behaviors and so forth, and reminding themselves and me that the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop, which I had, a desire to stop. So over this 23 years, it's been it's totally life-saving, especially hearing about people that have passed away from overdoses. I learned a statistic a few days ago that alcohol is responsible for more overdoses than all the other drugs combined. More people die of alcohol overdose than anything else. And that's a fact. So I'm really grateful for the program.
Well, thank you, Harold. Thank you. We got about 30 seconds.
Out of time. Yeah.
We're about out of time. Thank you for all you were out there listening. We hope that next Saturday night at 9 o'clock that you go to the rumradio.org website. Oh, by the way, we're in 74 countries. And we've had 48,000 people come to the site. So join us on rumradio.org. And thanks again for listening. See you on the radio, rumradio.org.